Today on 5 O'Clock Shadow, Senator Elizabeth Warren on populist legislation for student loans and a memorial for the Mambo Dervish, the late, great Ibrahim Gonzalez. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. Earlier this week, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren took part in a national conference call sponsored by MoveOn.org, aimed at bringing national attention to her pending legislation to protect students from usurious interest rates, whose magnitude is scheduled to double in the next few weeks from its current level of 3.4%. Warren's first bill, the Bank on Student Loans Fairness Act, would allow student borrowers to be able to take on federally subsidized loans at 0.75%. WBAI was there for Senator Warren's conference call for populist financing of student loans.
I want to say thank you to Move On. You guys have just been incredible. You've been there all through. The first place we started working very much was during the bank bailouts, and trying to bring some accountability to that process, and then the fight to get the consumer agency, and then trying to help stand up that consumer agency and defend it while it was being born, and then throughout my Senate race. And so I owe many, many thank yous to Move On and to all the partners that Move On has brought into many of our fights together. And I am so glad to hear that we have lots and lots of people on this call. I'm going to go over some of the key points on student loans. I know lots of people on the call will have them, but we can never say them enough because they are so important. We are facing a deadline. What will happen at the beginning of next month, July 1st, is that student loan interest rates on new loans will double from 3.4% to 6.8% unless Congress acts. And so we've got the deadline staring us down, and that's a good point for us to get organized. You know, I've met a lot of students around Massachusetts, students all around this country, and I hear the same story over and over. Students worked hard. They played by the rules. They finished school so they could give themselves a real chance. And now they're unable to move forward because they are drowning in student loan debt. And I think this is just fundamentally wrong. I talked to students all during my campaign about this, and I said, if I get to the United States Senate, I will make it a priority to work on this, and that's exactly what I'm doing now. You know, the student loan debt crisis is truly a crisis. It is a huge problem. It is a growing problem. As you know now, the Consumer Agency has documented, and others have now documented, that the combined student loan debt in the United States is more than $1 trillion, more than total credit card debt that all people everywhere in the United States owe, that the average debt per student borrower is nearly $25,000, and of course, average really doesn't hit it here. It's also that students, there are many students who have much more debt than that. And students who have struggled with this debt. Yeah, it's a crisis that hurts everyone. When young people are struggling to pay huge student loans, it undermines their financial security, but it also prevents them from buying homes, from saving for retirement, or engaging in consumption. In other words, the basic things that keep our economic engine moving forward. This is about individuals, it's also about our economy. And this means that unless we take action before July 1st to avoid the interest rate hike on federally subsidized Stafford loans, Congress is going to make a bad problem a lot worse. But even as students struggle to cope with the burden of big student loan interest rates, the government gives certain borrowers a much better bargain. If a big bank needs to take out a loan today from the Federal Reserve discount window, it can get a generous 0.75% interest rate. That's 0.75%. You know, these are the same banks that cost millions of Americans their jobs and nearly broke the economy. And a student who takes out a loan later this summer if Congress doesn't act, will have to pay nine times as much on her debt as Big Bank would. It isn't right, it isn't fair, and it isn't good economic policy. So that's why I recently introduced my first standalone bill in the United States Senate. This is Bank on Student Loan Fairness Act that Anna was just talking about. And the idea is pretty straightforward. It says students should have access to the same great deal that we give out to banks. The bill says, for anyone who doesn't know the details on it, for 1 year we would set the interest rate for new federally subsidized Stafford loans at primary interest rate that the banks get at the Federal Reserve discount window as of July 1st. Now, I don't kid myself. This is not a cure-all for all the problems that students face, but it does provide students a much-needed break as we work on longer-term solutions to solve the student debt crisis. We should not be punishing students for Congress's inaction. So I want to get this bill through, and the way I see it is it's a foot in the door. It's a way for us to get started on doing what we need to do. Now, not everyone agrees with this approach. You may have seen that the Republicans in the House of Representatives have passed their own student loan bill. However, this student loan bill, instead of lowering interest rates, actually would require students to pay more. The House bill is using the July 1st deadline as an opportunity to overhaul interest rates on all student loans. They want to put in place a system under which the federal government would profit even more from the student loan program. So I believe that we need to reform the student loan program, but we need changes that adhere to our values and that benefit our students. This isn't going to happen overnight. For now, we need a short-term solution that stops the rates from doubling in just a few weeks. So here's how I think this is going to go. Next week, I believe it will be next week, the Senate's going to vote on a bill to extend the current 3.4% interest rate for two more years. Senator Reid and Senator Harkin are co-sponsors of that bill. I joined them as a co-sponsor on the bill because I believe it's a step in the right direction that makes sure that the student loan interest rate does not double. This is going to be a tough fight. There are a lot of policymakers, there are a lot of folks in Congress who are set on ensuring that the student loans remain a profit center for the federal government. We have got to show Congress that this is an issue that matters and that students want the support of their senators and their representatives. So the government is scheduled to make $51 billion in profits on the loans it makes next year. They're going to make more than 36 cents in profit for every dollar they lend out. Proposals like the House bill would make even more money at the expense of our students. My view is we should not be profiting off students while they're struggling to get a good education. We need to see education as an investment. We don't offer financial aid to students because it's a quick way for the government to make a buck. We do it because it's a smart investment in the future and because it's the right thing to do. So that's why I'm talking to you today. That's what I'm fighting for. And that's why I am so glad to have as many partners as we can get involved in this. And I just think it's terrific that Move On is taking the lead on. So with that, Anna, I'm here. I'll answer. I think you said you want some other people to speak, and then I'll answer whatever questions you want me to answer.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Senator Warren, for that briefing and update. And yes, indeed, we'll have some time to take questions which are being submitted. We'll actually first start with a quick reminder that after the question and answer with Senator Warren, we'll be hearing from two really, really fantastic speakers, including a rising student organizing star named Alexandra Flores-Quilty, who's going to be telling us about what students are doing around the country to organize on this issue. So stay with us after the Q&A for that. But first, I'd like to throw it over for a question right here on the call, on the briefing, from Tom Leadham in Oregon with our first question.
Well, thank you for doing this, Senator Warren. I'm Tom Leadham. I'm from Oregon. I'm a board member of the Oregon Working Families Party and also the leader of Teamsters Local 206. I hear from members of our union all the time. They're concerned about how they'll pay for college for their kids. 20 years ago, good union jobs could put members' kids through college. Today, wages are stagnant, but even with jobs that haven't changed that much, college is out of reach for working class families. And that's why the Working Families Party is leading the campaign for debt-free higher education here in Oregon. So my question, Senator Warren, is how can we make Congress see that student debt affects entire families, not just young people?
Well, it's a good way to frame it, Tom. And I just want to say how glad I am to hear from you, to hear the way you frame the issue, because you put it exactly the right way. There was a time when if you worked hard, you were going to be able to make it. You were going to be able to have a pretty secure economic future, build a strong middle-class life without a college education. And that has gotten a whole lot tougher. Today, it's the case that in order to make it, it takes college, it takes advanced technical training, it takes more education post-high school. And that's what it takes to keep our economy strong and going. That's what it takes for individual families. And yet, increasingly, what we've done is we've shuffled this burden off on each individual family and said to them, in effect, load up on debt to figure out how to pay for it. And I think that's just fundamentally the wrong approach. I think we need to invest in our kids. We need to invest in people getting an education. That's going to be a payoff for the whole economy. It's going to be a payoff for those people individually. It's good for all of us. And I say that because I'll just go back to the point I made earlier. We make investments in large financial institutions every day. We lend them money at very low interest rates because we say it's important to our economy. Okay, if that's the case, we should be doing the same for our kids. So, Tom, your question was, how do we persuade Congress this is the case? We do it by what we're doing right now. You guys are terrific organizers. You all are connected in about a zillion different ways. This is one for which we just have to keep pushing back on Congress. You all have senators. You all have representatives. You should be in touch with them every single day about this issue. I know that Move On is going to have some great ideas for how we're going to do this, but I have to tell you, this one is true grassroots organizing, grassroots democracy. You can't do this by having a few people stand up in the United States Senate and a few people in the House and say, we think this is important. It's just not enough to move this place. This is going to be the test of whether or not we can organize something at the grassroots and move it forward. And so that's what it's going to take. It's going to take us on this call. It's going to take a whole lot more people. We've got to show them that we understand why it matters, that it does matter, and that they have got to respond. They have got to make the right changes. So that's how I see this. We've all got to do this one together, Tom.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Tom, and thank you, Senator Warren. We're going to take a couple of questions that are submitted on time until we run out of time with Senator Warren in about another 10 minutes or so. So Rhonda in Los Angeles, California, and Wayne in Clemont, Delaware, were among many thousands who sent in some version of this question. What about those who already have student loans that are out of control?
Boy, I am there. And the answer is, this bill is not going to fix that. It's just, we're just not there yet. This is the bill we're sticking in because we're coming up on a deadline. But let me make two parts clear going forward. We have two big tasks in front of us. One is around dealing with the student loan debt that is already out there, about refinancing student loan debt, about finding ways to get that debt down and under control. And we've got to do it. I see this as an emergency. We have got to do it. We've got to do it for our families. We've got to do it for our economy. We've got to do it because it's right. The second half, I'll just go ahead and put out there right now. We are going to have to deal with the rising cost of college. It is not enough just to deal with student loans. We have got to attack the rising cost of college head on. And I've said this all along, but both of those questions, question of how we're going to do that and how we're going to refinance the student loans that are out there and bring those debts down, those are just going to take more time. It's not one we can solve in a matter of a few weeks. What we've got to do right now is get organized for this July 1st deadline. But I don't want to kid anybody on this call. If we make it, if we get the student loan rate down, and it doesn't double come July 1st, we're not through. This is a foot in the door so we can make the changes we need to make. And I understand a lot of the people who are going to give put the wind in the sails for making this happen are people who are already out of college and who are struggling with their student loans. I regard the July 1st deadline as our down payment, our first step, but we've got to go to the question of student loan debt that lots of people are caring about. This. So I promise I'll still be there with you on this. We will work on this one together. It's just going to take us some time.
Hear, hear. So Donna from Macon, Georgia, wrote in asking, what are the possibilities that, Senator Warren, that you can persuade your Republican colleagues to come on board with this effort, and how can their constituents, so many of our, you know, over 10,000 listeners right now, how can the constituents of Republican members of Congress actually help in the effort to persuade them to support your bill?
Okay, so that's a good question, because when Donna first said, how am I going to do it, the answer is, I'm not going to do this by myself. I'm not in this by myself. That's why we're on this call together. That's why we're connected to each other all across this country. We have to do this together. And I'll tell you how you're going to persuade. We're going to persuade Republican senators and Republican members of Congress. We're going to call them. We're going to email them. We're going to tweet. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it every time they show up at a place where they've got a public meeting. We're going to stand up. And we've got to say this issue matters. Now, here's the good news. You know, Congress was last week not in session. And so everybody was back in their home jurisdictions. And tonight, we had a vote in the United States Senate. And so I went down to the floor to vote. Everybody comes in kind of late on Mondays when this happens. And people walked by me. And everybody said, while I was home, what people kept asking me about is how we're going to pay for the college loans. Are we going to let the interest rates double? What are we going to do about the college debt that's already out there? What are we going to do about the rising cost of college? In other words, you've already started this conversation. And yeah, I was hearing that mostly from Democrats, because those are the people who walked by and spoke to me about it. But you better believe, we make Republicans hear that too. We make independents hear that too. Struggling with student loan debt should not be a partisan issue. It should be an issue about what's right and what's wrong. It should be an issue about our values. It should be an issue about investing in our economy. It should be an issue about investing in our future by investing in educating our kids. And I think that's how we just get out there. We tell people it's important. If it's important to you and important enough that you get in touch with your senator, with your congressperson, you show up at meetings, you get your friends to do that, believe me, it becomes important to them too. That's how this one works.
Perfect. Those are amazing opportunities, and at the end of this call, we're going to have some more information about ways that folks can make their voices heard with their members of Congress, whoever they may be. So we have two similar questions from via Twitter from Dunn Law Offices and Michelle P123, which are, you know, when will any meaningful legislation affecting private student loans be passed, and could your bill include private loans?
So this bill, the one that's coming up for the July 1st deadline, no, it doesn't deal with private student loans at all. But, as I said, I think there's a foot in the door. When we deal with a more comprehensive bill, private student loans is something we certainly should be talking about. So it's got to be part of a bigger bill. And that's just going to take us more time, and that's going to mean it's harder. We've got to keep up the energy. We've got to keep up the push. But that's what it's going to take to get big and meaningful change.
Yep, got it. And then our last question for you is from Judy in Seattle, who asks thoughtfully, is anyone really listening to us in Washington? It seems like this fight is an uphill battle against the big banks and universities. I think we could all use a dose of inspiration. And she asks, I think, again, what can we do?
So, Judy, you know, this is, I really want you to hear me about this evening, walking onto the floor of the Senate and having people say to me, I was at home and nobody wanted to hear about, and they named all the other things that they think people in the press are talking about. They wanted to talk about college, about how our kids are being crushed by student loan debt. So the answer is, do they hear that there's something going on here? You bet they do. They're hearing that something's going on. Now, what we have to do is we just have to turn up the volume from there. This is an issue that has gotten enough people organized across this country, enough people saying, you know, this just isn't right, what we're doing. This isn't right to be profiting from our kids. It's gotten enough people engaged. I really do feel hopeful that we can do something, and we can do something that's meaningful. Like I said, I don't kid myself. You got it exactly right. It's going to be an uphill battle. There are lots of forces that will both directly attack and that will just inertia, you know, hard to get something through. On the other hand, some things are worth fighting for. And I guarantee if we don't fight for it, that it just gets worse. So I don't see any choice here. We fight for it because it's right. We fight for it because we care. And I truly do believe if we fight hard enough, you know, there may be some setbacks. It may take some time. But we're going to get it to a better place because we have to. Because this is fundamentally what's right for our people. It's fundamentally what's right for our economy. It's what we do together. If we can't do this, then we've got a problem with democracy. I mean, a fundamental problem. So I'll put in one more pitch to you. Let me see if I can persuade you one more way. You know, there were big banks lined up against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I read it over and over that it was dead on arrival. It would never happen. It couldn't happen. It wasn't going to happen. How do we ultimately get a consumer agency? We didn't get a consumer agency because a whole bunch of people in Congress said, you know, we just think this is a great idea. We're going to push it through. We got it because people, because MoveOn, because other groups got involved and said, we're going to push for this until we get it. And that's how we got people in Congress moving. It fundamentally changed my view of the world. I came to see that if enough people get involved, if enough people push hard enough, and we do it smart enough, and we do it determinedly enough, we really can make a difference. So I'm in this one all the way, and I hope everybody on this call is too.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Senator Warren. We had a huge amount of questions coming in from, over 10,000 people with us right now. So, you know, we'll have more opportunities this month to keep talking and planning together to help address the questions and ideas and everything that folks are raising over Twitter. I just want to thank you again, Senator Warren, for joining us, for the powerful remarks here, for your palpable energy and insight and all your leadership in the Senate. We are just so grateful and eager to work alongside you to restore fairness to the student loan system in the weeks and months and years ahead. So thank you for joining us. I know you're going to be taking off now, and we're grateful for your time.
I will. Thanks, Anna, so much for putting this together, and thanks to every one of you who's in on this call. And please stay in there while Anna gives you more about what we can do together. But we're going to stay in touch because we're going to do this together. We're going to fight shoulder to shoulder on this one. Thank you, Anna.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks again. Dum, 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 dum,
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren discussing her Bank on Student Loans Fairness Act with the executive director of MoveOn.org. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. WBAI is presently in the midst of our spring fund drive and is taking your tax-deductible donations at 516-620-3602. The navigation of this public radio station from tragedy to triumph was discussed recently with Christina Pagan on BronxNet Television in an interview featuring Public Affairs Director Kathy Davis and our late great colleague, Ibrahim Gonzalez.
Hello, viewers. I'm your host, Christina Pagan. And remember, this is a live and interactive talk show. We want to encourage you to join in on the conversation by following our social media pages on Twitter, at BronxNetTV, and Facebook by going to facebook.com/openbronxnettelevision. Not-for-profit public radio station 99.5 FM is at risk of shutting down, jeopardizing freedom of speech on the radio. The station has launched a campaign titled The Transmitter Fund in order to raise the money needed to pay the transmitter tower rent. Here to share more about the campaign and their upcoming event is Catherine Davis and Ibrahim Gonzalez. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having us.
No problem. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about what WBAI stands for? What is their mission?
WBAI is a listener-supported radio station. It's approximately 52 years old that it was created, and it's part of the Pacifica network, which is about 10 years older. Pacifica was created by Lou Hill, who was a war pacifist in World War II, mm-hmm. and actually was jailed so as not to go to war. And he created this first one radio station. It became a network, and its purpose is to bridge the gap between understandings and bring people together of different belief systems, different races, different creeds, to be able to create peace across the world. Mm-hmm. And WBAI was created by a gentleman named Lou Schweitzer, who was also very much opposed to the impact of commercials on media and on the ability of media to report the true news. And he ultimately donated his station to Pacifica, and WBAI became part of the Pacifica network that has five stations: New York, Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas, Berkeley, California, and Los Angeles.
What kind of programming can we find on Pacifica here in New York?
Well, we have a mixture of public affairs, music, and something we call live radio, which is sort of like what you're doing, where it's eclectic and mixes music and conversation and the arts with public affairs. And we have a number of talk shows. We have Wake Up Call from at 6 to 8 and Democracy Now from 8 to 9. And then we have programs like Talk Back and 5 O'Clock Shadow, which are all politically based. And then we have a music strip in the morning, 10 to 12. We have music programs on the weekend. And the evenings and overnights, it's more eclectic. But it's sort of a checkerboard of different kinds of programs. We have programs that focus on housing issues, on legal issues, mm-hmm. social justice, labor. So we really are, we call ourselves the, you know, the radio station for the 99%, and we cover those issues.
Indeed. So what's the problem now? What's going on with this transmitter? Where is it and why?
The transmitter is on top of the Empire State Building. Mm-hmm. And we've had the transmitter there from the beginning, and the rents have escalated tremendously. And so we went from paying something in the neighborhood of $28,000-$30,000 a month. Now that's a lot.
That is a lot.
But now we're having to pay between $49,000 and $52,000 each month.
Wow.
For our transmitter. And it's important because we reach the whole city, all the boroughs, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania. Yeah. It's a very broad audience that we can reach. And since the towers came down, the Empire State Building is kind of the only game in town. And so the rent has escalated.
They've taken advantage.
Well, yeah, they can. I guess they have the ability to do that. And we've also had the same kind of difficulty with our office address. We were at a Wall Street address. When we moved in, it was a building designed for nonprofit organizations. About midway through, it was purchased and converted into 50-50 commercial. And, you know, rents escalated very quickly there as well.
Right.
And because we don't actually take corporate money at all, we only depend on the listeners, you know, the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. But those are really small donations that come to us. And times have been hard for everyone, so the donations haven't been where we needed them to be to keep scale with our escalating costs.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of been dragging behind us this debt that slowly built up.
Right.
And, you know, we'd pay on it regularly, but we could never quite catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we approached a point where sort of the roof fell in. And a lot of that was with Hurricane Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on Wall Street right by the water. the East River, and our building actually flooded almost to the third floor.
Wow.
And we've had no phone service since that time.
Oh my goodness.
So we've been struggling, but we're moving ahead, and we've moved the studios, sharing with City University in Harlem, and over by 137th Street, and then we have office space downtown. It's a space that was offered to nonprofits because of Hurricane Sandy. So we have a few months reprieve, and so now we're at the point of needing to get current on all of these bills that have escalated mm-hmm. and threatened to shut us down, really.
What kind of threshold are you looking at?
Well, we're looking to raise $500,000 by the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
We're halfway there, so it's not,
good.
You know, it's not as tragic as it might have been. And so we've been paying really huge payments to the Empire State Building. We've made like a $50,000 payment, $120,000 payment, something like that. So we're making huge payments.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also paying on our back rent to the tune of $30,000, $20,000. So it's like between now and August, I would say, that we have this period where we have to really catch up and raise enough money to keep the station broadcasting.
Oh, I understand you're having an event tonight to help with that.
Yes, we are. We're having an event at SOBs, and Ibrahim will
Sounds
talk more
Brazil.
About that.
Yeah, the world-famous Sounds of Brazil at 405 Varick Street and the corner of West Houston. And we have several bands playing. We're going to have a band called Ibrahim Gonzalez and Y Amigos. And then also
you're not in that, right?
I'm heading it front and center, and I'm, you know, back in the music business the way I want to be with
Fantastic.
This with this event. This has been my impetus to get back behind the congas. And Chico Alvarez and Mauricio Smith Jr. with their charanga band. Manuel Kendall's Libre, which is Bronx-based, originally from here, under the direction of Andy Gonzalez. And then we're also going to have another Bronx, a son of the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
We got SOBs playing at SOB. Bobby Sanabria and his Afro-Cuban jazz big band from the Manhattan School of Music.
Wow.
All of that begins tonight at 6 p.m. It's the first in a series of fundraisers that we're going to do off the air, because we can't just keep pitching on the air
right.
and asking for money. It impacts the programming in a way that it doesn't allow for the creative stuff to come through as much. But that's tonight at SOB's, and there's a phone number people can call to get tickets. Could I give that out on the air?
Absolutely.
Put it up on the screen on the lower third. Okay, here we go. It's 516-620-3602. You can call there and buy tickets, but not only that, but also anybody that wants to make a contribution to the transmitter fund,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they could also call that number to make a contribution to save our transmitter. Once the transmitter goes, there's no more radio station. It'll be taken off the map in terms of terrestrial radio. So everybody's pulling together, Kathy, myself, all of our colleagues at WBAI, our volunteers, people on the board of directors, on the local station board, and the Pacifica National. It's a big family. And
yeah.
we extend our invitation to the people of the Bronx and beyond
right.
to help us out on the cause.
Yes, we have a lot of members that reside in the Bronx, so I'm really happy to be able to be here to talk to them from your TV station. And they could actually come to our website as well,
mm-hmm.
WBAI.org. And not only will you see the various ways that you can support the station, you could also see the schedule, because Ibrahim has a program there on Sunday and Chico has a program
mm-hmm.
on Sunday. And so a lot of the people that you'll be seeing and meeting at this event are producers at our radio station. And so it's a big community, and we hope to expand and flourish.
Mm-hmm.
As
Are there any
forward.
Other alternatives for you guys other than transmitting through the Empire State Building? I mean, in terms of like web broadcasting, things like that?
Well, we do broadcast on the internet. If you go to our website, WBAI.org, it streams. But there's something about having a radio broadcast. It's the only thing that's really free that everyone can have access to in a way that maybe not everyone has a computer,
mm-hmm.
but people can get access to radio. And it also gives us a tremendous local power. So the internet is important when you want to reach across the globe. but we're a New York station, and we bring in people from the community, and we cover the issues that are taking place in the Bronx and in Queens and in Brooklyn. And so it's a very live station, and I think it's important to have that terrestrial radio experience. It's a very different kind of experience than internet radio, because much of it is live.
And let me piggyback with the fact that the large media conglomerations have swallowed up a lot of the frequencies from coast to coast, and we're one of the few standing non-commercial radio stations, especially here in New York, where 99.5 FM is right in the middle of the dial, to the left of us and to the right of us, nothing but commercial radio.
Right. Very popular stations, too.
Yeah, that's right. And very competitive, and they do what they do well, but we do what we do. And we represent community and a different paradigm for communication here in New York City.
Right. Can you give us that number again for...
Sure. The number to call in for donations for the Transmitter Fund is 516-620-3602.
That's great. Do you have any other things you want to say? How can people, like, get involved in terms of being with the radio, working at the radio?
Well, they should go to the website, WBAI.org, because we do have interns, and we have people who come in and get involved with the station. We need a lot of volunteers. Most of our producers are actually, you know, unpaid volunteer producers. So I would say 98% of the producers who have regular programs are volunteers. And so that would be the thing to do, to go to the website and get in contact with us and find out how you can get involved in producing radio.
Great. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me.
Kathy Davis and the late Ibrahim Gonzalez recently speaking with Christina Pagan about WBAI on BronxNet TV. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. On the evening of June 3, 2013, our dear friend and WBAI colleague Ibrahim Gonzalez passed away at home in his sleep. Ibrahim was known both personally and institutionally as the Mambo Dervish, based on his skill as a bandleader and conga player, and for his devotion to Sufi Islam. Ibrahim was a co-founder in 1975 of the Alianza Islamica, the nation's oldest national organization for Latino Muslims, which was then based in his childhood community of East Harlem, before moving to Mott Haven in Ibrahim's beloved Bronx. Although he was first reared as a Catholic, he said that he was not so much converted as he was reverted to Sufi Islam. Ibrahim said of the Islamic Alliance that, quote, "Islam represented a place for us to be part of a larger community when we realized that within Islam there was every spectrum of people, regardless of class, regardless of race. We were attracted to that universal principle of human interaction and communion with the divine," end quote. But the organization's commitment to nonviolence did not immunize Ibrahim from a 1994 visit from FBI agents, whom Ibrahim characterized as, quote, "looking for terrorists," end quote. However, the most explosive element of Ibrahim's life was his dynamic mastery of the conga drums, through which he has composed for symphonies and led his own eponymous orchestra and quintet, as well as the Nia Rican Jazz Experience, among innumerable projects and performances celebrating the Afro-Caribbean and Latin rhythms of salsa and Nia Rican culture. Ibrahim recently headlined a WBAI benefit at the world-famous SOBs and has appeared at the Bronx Museum and many other venues. Ibrahim, always nattily dressed in such trademark outfits as bow ties, suspenders, fedoras, Panama hats, and linen suits, was ubiquitous as the smiling center of a whirlwind of music, daily incarnating his legend as the Mambo Dervish. But Ibrahim's gifts were so bountiful that not even music could contain them all. He was a highly accomplished still photographer, mastering the artistically demanding film discipline of the twin lens reflex, in addition to modern digital media, including his talent as a professional videographer and television reporter and documentarian. Those skills earned him on-air work at BronxNet Television, where he consistently reported on people and things that matter in the preservation of New York City's polymorphic culture. Here at WBAI, Ibrahim's gentle dialogues and grasp of global affairs earned him his highly acclaimed airtime on such programs as Wake Up Call, Radio Libre, and his mystical morning show, In the Moment, which he described as, quote, a spontaneous mix of eclectic sounds, interviews, and live performance, end quote. Prior to his arrival at WBAI, Ibrahim was also featured on the broadcasts of our current studio hosts, WHCR, Harlem Community Radio. This Renaissance man also taught piano, composition, digital audio production, and the history of Latin Caribbean music at our own alma mater, Manhattan College in Riverdale, and throughout the New York City school system. Ibrahim Gonzalez is survived by 4 brothers, 5 children, and 11 grandchildren, numerous nephews and nieces, and other relatives located in New York, California, Puerto Rico, Africa, and elsewhere, as well as his loving wife, Janet Norquist Gonzalez, an educator and award-winning cartographer. On a personal note, your reporter recalls the time late last year when he was hospitalized in his own near-death crisis, the complete recovery from which was aided in no small part by the bedside presence of beloved friend Ibrahim Gonzalez, who on several occasions roused him from his propofol stupor into the redemptive joy of hearing Ibrahim read aloud his favorite science fiction novel from an edition too heavy at the time for the then weakened and unsteady hands of your reporter. Ibrahim's healing instincts also extended to his beloved WBAI, where, with staff and management initiatives and your kind contributions, we together move to a higher state of institutional health. Among Ibrahim's most recent messages to your reporter was this, I just want to help, end quote. Ibrahim Gonzalez, a mambo dervish whose whirlwind was as big as the world itself. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. If you, too, would like to help WBAI survive, please consider making a tax-deductible donation at this time with a call to our Pledge Center on behalf of the station so loved by our late, great friend and colleague, Ibrahim Gonzalez. The number is 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Meanwhile, we now hear Ibrahim Gonzalez in his own words.
Growing up in Spanish Harlem was an incredible experience because I heard music everywhere in the neighborhood. Me spinning around in my uncle's living room, who had a stereo hi-fi system and played the music of the greats, the music of Cal Jader, the music of Mongo Santa Maria, and the big three, Machito, Tito Puente, and Tito Rodriguez. My grandmother, both my parents, a lot of our relatives, they were all music lovers. They would get together at family gatherings, sing songs, play music on the record player. And parties may not have been something that we did every weekend, but when my family threw a party, boy, they really didn't know how to celebrate. Anda. And growing up in a family that had appreciation for our culture, our Puerto Rican roots, really planted the seeds for what I was later to become very proud of and very taken to, which is our music. The conga drum is one of the fundamental instruments in Latin music. And Latin music wouldn't be what it is without it. That is happening with Latin music is that it's undergoing various transformations. I would say that reggaeton is the more recent manifestation of a new movement within the Caribbean-based rhythm. That kind of rhythm in reggaeton is definitely Caribbean based. It's a windy night in the Bronx, but I'm having a good time because I found one of my old-time favorite vinyl records. It's an LP, a long plane, goes at 33 and a third revolutions per minute. Revolution, you know what I'm saying? All power to the people of the Bronx, of course. And Chubby Checker, I don't know if he was from the Bronx, but he sure used to love to dance. And as a kid, I would be dancing the whole day to this particular record. So I'm going to slide it out of the cover. Got some nice liner notes there. Carefully place the vinyl record on the turntable. And got to find the spindle, right? So there you go. You got to be very careful how you place the tone arm on the record, because you never want to scratch your record. So there it goes, 33 and a third revolutions per minute. Take the tone arm, be very careful, drop the stylus on the record, and let it play. You have to dance if you want to be part of my revolution. The more I read poetry, the more interested I became in writing poetry of my own and making my own individual statement. This is a story from a long time ago. 700 or 800 years have passed or so. A time of knights in shining armor. Medieval times we set out to honor. The poetic music of storytellers from door to door. Artistic, theatrical, the troubadour. Then in Spain, there were many folk. Arab, Visigoth, Celt and Jew. Roman, Berber, Frank and Gypsy, they all knew that gold and riches belonged but to a few. The rest, with love, daily bread and some stew, some song and dance, they all made do. From town to town, they would wander, telling tales of over yonder. To young and old, rich and poor, these stories, till today, endure. Poems of romance facing danger with no chance. Legends of heroes throughout the land. Bravery and wit worked hand in hand. Never fancied the people of these quarters. Civilized people lived across Atlantic waters. On ventured the Mandinga of Africa, on canoes. After which, on Pinta, Niña, and Santa Maria, sailed you-know-who. Upon arriving the shores of Quisqueya, they found people, Taino, Caribe, all around. They lived in harmony with their enchanted tropic, though still today an unknown topic. Then greed and slaughter were to follow, a dark beginning of much sorrow. In the long run, peace and harmony won out. Life became better without a doubt, and Jíbaro from the hills would shout, Viva Puerto Rico Libre! Standing proudly and stout. The Taino, his maracas would shake, all pure and good spirits to awake. The Spaniard of old land would sing and strum, the African of his ancestors lie bait and drum. Troubadours of a new breed were they, from pueblo to pueblo spreading news day by day. Jíbaros, Guajiros, a culture, a new way, fresh birth of expression, come what may. So these are the people we speak of now, who sang their song, pushed their plow. They give thanks daily and work the land, and by night organize their merry band. On cuatros, guitarras, güiros, tambores, they perform. On wood, ceramic, and canvas, adorn. Art for all, and all for art. Now, you and I can do our part. Radio, as you know, is a very oral medium. You always have to have something to say on the radio, one way or the other. Whether you say it by hiding behind the music that you play and piecing it together in just the right type of combination of sequence and mix and mood and color, or if you get on the mic and you start riffing and start talking to the audience.
Buenos días, señor Ibrahim.
Buenos días. Sí, a su servicio.
I love hearing you when it's Latin time, and it's lovely hearing you in the morning.
I love hearing you right now.
A little rest, but you can understand why, you know, just waking up and all. But, you know, I'd like to remind people that Bob Fast was on at a time when listening to certain stations was almost going against the government, and saying certain things was could get you killed. Now, things ain't changed that much, okay? And we should count our blessings for WBAI every day. Every single day. Dios te bendiga, cariño.
Gracias, okay. Igualmente. Que Dios me la haga santa. Wow. Okay, well, that's... I can take that to the bank, okay? I don't need any money after that call.
But one thing that does keep me in that type of mode of taking calls on the air is the spontaneity of it all, how I could open myself and how I can open up the airwaves to people's feelings, to their thoughts, to their concerns. And that's Freeform Radio.
Mario Murillo is in the studio. I want to thank everybody. This is Ibrahim Gonzalez. This has been In the Moment. Thank you so much for all of the calls, really, all of them. And what I want to say is that we'll be back, inshallah, next week, same place, 3:30 to 6 on In the Moment. I'm on this Sunday on the Barrio Block as well. Check us out from 2 to 4, and stay tuned for Wake Up Call con mi hermano y amigo, Mario Murillo. And as we say in the Bronx, cógelo con take it easy. Assalamu alaikum.
I am a child of the 60s, and I'm a citizen of the world, and also I'm a creative person into the 21st century. Creative cinema has always grabbed my attention because it goes beyond the bounds of, okay, here's the beginning, here's the body of the work, and then there's a conclusion, and everybody lives happily ever after.
Salsero, vamos a ver.
I know people have a certain expectancy level when they watch a film or when they see a television program, and they want to feel good at the end of it. But what I would like to do is go beyond just that, kind of like just feel good, just kind of being nice to the audience. I want the audience to work with me. I want them to consider the things that I'm presenting. I would also like to work at it myself so that I get to another place. I get to a totally different place with whatever it is that I either write or spontaneously produce and put out there into the ether.
And that concludes today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow, featuring Abraham Gonzalez and Senator Elizabeth Warren. The program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins and Reggie Johnson and produced with Kathy Davis, with appreciation to BronxNet TV. We welcome your comments with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.